Thank you, Lisa. Thank you for all my helpers. It's a great pleasure to have that. A lot of details go into service, so it's really nice to have that taken care of. My job is only to give the sermon, so it's kind of easy. It's kind of funny because when people find out you're giving a sermon, there's often they'll often ask you for the topic, and then when you give them the topic, they have like a verse or a favorite verse or an idea for you, and it's just nice. And basically, what it tells me is that people really care about the sermon, and that's an important part of their week. And I know Bodily works very hard, and I've tried to I'm going to try and do my best to present the best as I can. In fact, I was in Northern California, and I was in a business meeting, and there was a bunch of people I didn't know, and I suspected one of them was a Christian. I was going over the cities I had spoken in this year, and I just offhand mentioned that I said, also, I'm giving a sermon this Sunday. He's like, oh, really? What's the topic? And I told him the topic. And he's like, oh, well, I think this verse would be really good. And I was like, gee whiz, did I use that verse? And I went back later and I said, yeah, I did use that verse. So it was just kind of funny. People really invested in the sermon as an important time of their week. So I think that's really neat. The title of this sermon is, Do You Live in a Tent? Do You Live in a Tent? Which is kind of a funny title. You might have a guess of what it's about based on the scripture I chose for today. But the talk is really about money. And I know some people might be thrown off by that, like, oh my goodness, he's going to ask for money or whatever. Obviously, I have no, you know, it's not my goal. But it is an important topic, and I think, unfortunately, it doesn't get talked about a lot in pulpits for some reasons I'll go into in a minute. But the Bible talks, by someone's count, the most accurate number I had found, 2,350 times about money. Jesus talked about money about 700 times. Based on the occurrence of money, you would think it would be talked about a lot, but it doesn't get talked about a lot in sermons. And there's some reasons for that I'm going to go into. But really, the talk isn't really about money. It's kind of about money, but it's about your relationship with money. Because money itself is just a piece of paper. You know, it's your relationship with the money that I think is a very important aspect, and an important aspect that I don't hear talked about too much. You know, Jesus was confronted in Matthew 22 about money, particularly giving taxes. And they asked about the coins, and he says, whose image is this? And whose inscription on the coin that they're showing him? And they reply, Caesar's. And he says, well, give back to Caesar what's Caesar, and give to God what's God's. And what he's trying to say, of course, is that the money is just a symbol, and in fact, it's your relationship to that money, and how you see it, and how you see God in relationship to that, that's important. So money is really just a symbol, and it potentially is a symbol of our trust, okay? If you look at the back of almost all the U.S. currency, it says what? It says, in God we trust, right? Why does money say that? Because it could be because the original people who designed the currency were concerned in a sort of philosophical way that people would start to trust the currency and start to trust their own prosperity and not so much trust God anymore. So I don't really know the history of why that's there, but in doing research for the sermon, it kind of hit me. In God we trust. It's on the money, right? Trying to say, this money is not what you're supposed to be trusting in. But at the same time, we have a reason to be suspicious of people who are asking for money. We have suspicious of people who think our money should be given to them. And there's a good reason for that. We're a very consumer-focused society. I know it may not be as obvious to everyone here, but when I go to other countries and see countries that are not as consumer-focused, I kind of understand going back how many advertisements we see in a given short period of time, how many ways corporations and businesses are trying to sell to us in so many different ways. And when a new communication methods comes up, the businesses find a new way of marketing to us. So there's a good reason we're suspicious. And I think sometimes when people get up in a sermon and they start to talk about money, they're just like, oh, that person's talking about money because they want some from us, or they think the church should get some from us. Honestly, I'm going to show you, I think that's completely false. And I'm going to kind of make a pretty strong case why giving money is actually to benefit the giver, not always just the person who receives it. And I think I have an interesting case for that. But again, getting back to some of the skittishness we have about people asking for money. Again, we're in a consumer-focused society. Businesses have gotten very good at trying to get money out of us. I mean, just think QVC, right? Infomercials. I think infomercials sort of start here. QVC's out in Westchester. We have email. I'm sorry. We have email scams where people are sending us email trying to get money from us. Phone call scams. You know, I mean, it's really scary. And you have to be suspicious because there are so many people who are trying to get money. In fact, in a really horrific way, you know, greedy television preachers have used the medium to use the gospel as a way of extorting money, right? I mean, my father used to, there was one particular guy who used to be on television years ago, and he would say, I can't believe they're allowing this guy on television. I didn't really know what he meant. And he showed it to me once, and I was like, oh, my, this is terrible, right? I mean, I'm thinking there's got to be a special place in hell for this person because they're using the gospel in a corrupting way to extort money, and God cannot be happy. He cannot be happy. In fact, my father's other observation was he said, is this what people think Protestants do? Like, if that's their only exposure, if you're a Catholic and your only exposure to Protestantism is this person on television trying to extort money, like, I don't think I want to be part and involved with Protestantism at all. You know, I mean, it just, anyway, I thought it was very interesting. But in a way, money is like the third rail of preaching. A lot of people don't want to mention it, particularly your sitting pastors don't mention it. I'm a guest, so I'm not even a member, so hey, I can kind of talk about it. And it's not a third rail for me. But it is, if you look at how many times Jesus talked about it and how many times we hear sermons about it, it doesn't really line up. And there's good reason for that. I know a lot of other churches where the elders are pushing the pastor to talk about it, and he's like, oh, I don't feel comfortable. And anyway, there's a lot of reason, there's a lot of sort of third rail or risk in talking about it. But I think it is important. And you know, I want to start off right now and say something you probably already know. God doesn't need your money. He doesn't need your money. Okay? God can do just fine without your money. So don't think you're somehow like, oh, well, I'm going to give him a little bit and like keep him going. Like, he doesn't need that, right? Everything you have is from God. The fact you're here is from God. All your money's from God. It's already his, okay? It's just a question of how you decide to use it and whether you decide that you're going to allow him to be part of how you spend money or whether you're going to control how you spend the money. And that's really, I think, the issue. In fact, let's look at some specifics. Again, I used some long past issues today, but I really did underline a lot of the concepts that I have. In fact, the first passage is from the book of Numbers. You know, there must be some bonus points for a pastor using the book of Numbers. You know, for those of you who have read that book, I was very happy when I found what I wanted in the book of Numbers. And there's two probably big things that I get out of the first passage. The first one is that the saying, I give to the Levites and their inheritance the tithes that the Israelites present as an offering. So what they're saying, again, back in the Old Testament times, is that the Levites, who were the priestly, you know, sort of the pastors of the day, if you want to put it that way, you know, they're going to get a tithe. They're going to get a tenth. That's going to be their sort of job. They're not going to get an inheritance. and it's going to be sort of, that's going to be their allotment. Okay, so that's kind of how it's set up from the Old Testament. And the second thing, and it also says, speak to the Levites and say to them, when you receive from the Israelites the tithe. It's not if you receive it, it's just when. Okay, so there's, again, these are under the law, so there's a whole bunch of rules around this. We're not under those rules in the same way. But again, Old Testament times, that's really where it was. Present the Lord's portion, the best and holiest parts of everything given to you, kind of underscoring that. And of course, they're talking about the tent of meeting, okay? So what you see in the Old Testament is God's expectation is for everyone to give 10%, plus an additional giving. I'm not going to go into, there's a whole bunch of other things that were on top of that, certain years and so forth, but it was kind of 10% plus, basically. And that is for a society, and back to the title of the sermon, that's for a society that's living in tents, okay? So you're living in a tent, and you're giving 10%, and I'm kind of thinking about it, I'm like, well, you know, I don't know anybody who lives in a tent today. There might be some, I'm sure there's some people, but I don't know any of them. Most of us don't live in tents. I think clearly our standard living, even if there's some people who do live in tents, God's standard, again, according to the Old Testament, was 10%. So you'd have to be living, I guess, in less than a tent to kind of see it didn't make sense. But our standard of living is so much improved from tents. I mean, it's really not measurable, I think, in any meaningful way. So shouldn't giving a tithe, giving 10% become easier? Because, again, if I was living in a tent, I would think 10% would be kind of a lot in terms of my standard of living. But, again, if I'm kind of in a house, then 10% wouldn't be as bad or wouldn't be as big an impact. But I'm not sure if that's – I don't think that's actually the case. And I'm going to talk later about why I think that it's not – the 10% is, again, under the law, but – It's part of, it has a lot to do with how we view money that I think is the fundamental thing here. So the other interesting thing is that having been to a bunch of different churches, I don't have no idea about this church, but I know that in most churches there is an inordinately small percentage of people who are carry the church budget, and a lot of other people just don't think it's important or give somewhere else that the church can't find out or don't know anything about. But it seems like that small percentage who kind of carry the church is really not related completely to the income differences within the church. It's just certain people feel that they have, a duty to uphold the church and to give away 10% or more to the church, and some people don't. And it's usually a small percentage that do. Having heard a little bit about budgets in other churches, so that's kind of God's expectation from the Old Testament of how his church, how his work is to be funded. And I think it's pretty clear. I think it's, again, it should be pretty easy for us because we're not living in tents anymore. But it isn't something that I would say the majority, unfortunately, of even churchgoers follow, at least from the churches that where I've seen budgets and kind of looked at it. And, you know, that's got to be disappointing to God. But that's his expectation. But, you know, that's not really the end of the story, because that's really just, how do I explain it? That's just the expectation, but obviously, you know, Jesus kind of takes it, and, you know, Jesus was sort of where the rocket takes off to me, right? So you've got the Old Testament expectation of a tithe and the legalistic aspects of that. But when you get to the New Testament, it kind of just takes off. And I'm going to explain why I think that's true. Because when you think of the verses that Lisa talked about, Jesus sort of starts to dig into giving in a way that connects giving to our heart, to our trust, to who we are, and to where we put our faith. So the first aspect that I remember from Matthew 6 is Jesus says, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And obviously he's saying that if your treasure is basically the money that you have and that's how you see your treasure, then that's where you're going, or your heart's going to be. And he gets even more specific in a little bit. And again, it's in the same chapter. You know, we just read a straight block. I didn't pick things out of it. We just read a straight block. But, you know, Jesus says, no one serves two masters. Either you'll hate the one or love the other, or you'll be devoted to one and despise the other, right? And if you're unclear exactly what he's talking about, the next sentence clearly, you know, says you cannot serve both God and money. So what Jesus is telling me, at least, is that if you are so concerned about money, that's where your heart's going to be. That's what you're going to trust, okay? If you can disconnect yourself from trusting in the money that you have, or trusting in whatever, the skills, whatever, then effectively that's where I want you to be, because I want you to love me. I don't want you to love the money I've given you, which is kind of, I think, what is he's trying to get at. And obviously this is nothing new. This has been, you know, this was written 2,000 years ago. It's the same issue we have today. So, you know, you shouldn't feel bad. It's just the way we are. And then he goes sort of into a poetic direction, sort of, I would say, appealing to more of your aesthetic or feelings. And he says, look at the birds in the air, right? They don't do anything. They don't work. But look how good they look, right? They look fine. And God cares for them. God's going to care for you. And then he says, you know, can any of you live in longer an hour, right? Can you add an hour to your life? No, you can't, right? The flowers in the field, hey, they look great. You know, none of us look that good. And he's saying, well, they look great. I don't know why you're worrying about yourself. Like, I can take care of them. I can take care of you. And then sort of to the bottom, he gets into sort of a psychological approach. He says, seek the kingdom first. And then he says, don't worry about tomorrow. And he uses the word worry there. And a lot of us, I think, one of the reasons that maybe we're holding on to that money too tightly is not maybe because we really love it or we treasure it, but because we're fearful. We're fearful that if we let it go or we don't hold on to it tight enough, that effectively nobody will care for us, that we'll be just kind of adrift. And, you know, Jesus is saying, don't worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow has to worry about itself. Today has enough problems. And that's certainly true of me. And I have to admit, I had a sort of a similar experience in trusting the wrong things. As you know, I go to a lot of countries. I've spoken to a whole bunch of cities just this year. I go to some unusual places, you know, southern Mexico, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, China. And sometimes it's really odd. Like, I remember I went to Mexico once. I got picked up in Veracruz, Mexico, and by some people I had only knew through email. And they're driving me 3 hours to Tapachula, Mexico. And we get to Tapachula, Mexico, and they picked me up at night because my flight landed late, so like at 8 o'clock, so it's like 11:30 at night. I'm driving through Tapachula, Mexico, Quetzalcoatlus, Mexico, and we're driving by the beach, and there's probably five cargo ships on the beach, like seven-story cargo ships that have been beached on the beach that are rusting. It must have been there for like months, if not years, right? So I'm driving, I'm thinking, what is this? Like, there's these ships that are just sitting on the beach. And I look over the other side, and there's all these abandoned, like, high-rise buildings. And I'm thinking, you know, I don't know who these people are. I just met them. They just picked me up. They could just kill me, throw me in one of these buildings. Nobody would ever find me. Like, you'd never know. I got off in Veracruz, and, like, you'd never know where I was, right? It can happen, you know. And I think your mind kind of plays with you a little bit. So, you know, I kind of started to think, well, you know, as long as I have, like, my cell phone and my laptop or my briefcase, I'll be okay. Like, I'll figure out something, you know. I remember going to Sri Lanka, and somebody drove us up into the mountains, and he didn't speak English, and I'm with another guy, and They told us the drive was going to be 3 hours, and 5 hours in, it's getting smaller roads and smaller roads. And I'm thinking, well, if we dial 911 on the cell phone, like, is it going to ring in Newtown Square? And I'm going to have to explain that I'm in Sri Lanka, but you're in Newtown Square, and I need somebody to help me. Like, you know, all these. And then, like, 10 minutes later, we pull into this beautiful resort, and I'm like, oh, wow, look at this. It's really great, you know? So, but your mind plays these tricks because you're kind of adrift out there in a world that you don't know anybody, right? And you start to think, oh, I'll only be okay if I have my cell phone. I'll be okay if I, well, you know, in November of last year, I was in San Francisco. I was speaking, went to a restaurant. I left my laptop and briefcase in a rental car. It was broken into. That's a common problem, it seems, in San Francisco. So I was like, okay, I'm in San Francisco, but all the things that I'm used to sort of allowing me to continue operating, I don't have anymore. Right? Like, I'm kind of adrift here. But you know, it actually kind of was fine. And I realized through the process that I really didn't need all the stuff I thought I needed. Okay, so I was in a restaurant, I was with some guys. We all came out, all of our laptops and all of our briefcases were stolen. So I'm like, okay, I saw my cell phone, it's in my pocket, but I don't have anything else. I have luggage that's in the hotel, but there's nothing really in the luggage except clothes. So I'm like, okay, what do I do? Okay, so they take us back to the hotel. I ask the front desk, I give my cell phone. They're like, oh yeah, we have a charger for that. You can charge your cell phone when you come down in the morning. Just pick it up. So I'm like, okay, here's a cell phone. I walk upstairs. Don't have any bags, so again, nothing to carry. I kind of set an alarm somehow. I actually used the alarm in the hotel, which never did before. You know, I get up in the morning, I pack my bags, I go downstairs, I pick up my cell phone, I take the shuttle to SFO, I still have my license, I'm like, all right, I get on the plane, I go there, I don't have a laptop, I don't have anything, but I have, all of my presentations are up on the internet, so I walk in, I'm like, you know, I'm sorry, I don't have my clicker, I don't have a laptop, but I'm going to speak tonight at 7 o'clock. He's like, no problem, we can use my laptop, you just show us where to download the thing, we'll get you quicker. So I go, I get my presentation, I go to bed, I get up in the morning, I get on my plane, and I'm home, you know? And then I make a list of everything, and I basically reorder everything. I go on Amazon, I order everything, I reorder my laptop, my briefcase like that, everything's in it just like before. I didn't need any of that stuff, right? But psychologically, when I was traveling, I thought I needed it to make it, to actually get home. And I don't need it, right? So there's a lot of ways, and I finally kind of felt like a Terminator too, like the guy who just kept going and you just couldn't kill. Because it was just a lot of stuff. But effectively, all the stuff that I was trusting in to kind of keep me going, didn't need them. And I only learned that by losing them, right? So now I'm not as paranoid about where my luggage is or where my whatever is. I'll be fine, right? And that's kind of what Jesus was worrying about. He said, tomorrow has enough worry about itself. Just worry about today and let tomorrow worry about itself, right? One of the things that really came through to me was that I can't trust in things. But one of the things I really did realize is I can trust the people around me. So the people I was with kind of obviously got me through the process. When I got home, I called my passport guy, and he lined up the passport within 2 days because I was traveling out of the country within a period after that. I called my eyeglass place because my eyeglasses were in the briefcase, and they, you know, bopped in there and they got it within a week or whatever. And I realized that basically it was just a question of calling up everybody and saying, hey, here, I need this, I lost this, I need you to help me. And they're like, okay, cool. Okay, and it was the people around me that kind of sort of, those are the people who really helped me, not the stuff that I have. Because as long as I had those people, all that stuff could be replaced. Okay? And it, in a funny kind of way, I know we see the Amish a lot when we go to Lancaster, and they have these funny ways of not using stuff, but one of the underpinnings of why they live that way is so that they trust within their community. They don't put too much trust in things that are outside their community. So the idea is that they're self-contained, they have their own, you know, sort of way of doing things, and they're self-sufficient. So again, there's a sense that they're trying to bring their heart back to where everyone is. Okay? So if you're kind of wondering, like, sort of where your heart is or how you should really understand this, I think you kind of have to answer this question about who you are. And the question is, if you're in a difficult position or you're feeling anxious, you ask the question and you try and convince yourself. You say, I'm going to be fine. I'm going to be fine because why? Like, if you're in a difficult position, you think, I'm going to be fine because what? I'm going to be fine because I have a pocket full of money, or because or I have a possessions, or I have a good job prospects, or I have good skills, and that's why I'm going to be fine. Okay? Are you going to be fine because people care about me? Because it's your circle of friends? That's what's going to, why you're going to be fine if you're in a difficult position? Or are you going to be fine because God loves me? And that's really what Jesus was kind of saying. He's like, don't worry about all that stuff, right? I take care of all the foliage out there. I can take care of you. You're the one, you should be think you're fine because I love you, okay? And that's the challenge that always has to go through our mind. Now, I'm not going to minimize the help we provide by giving to others, because there is a huge amount of help we provide. But honestly, when Jesus is talking, giving of the money is not for others. It's for you. Because effectively, giving money is a way you can continually reinforce that this money is not mine. The blessings that I have are not mine. And it's really God that I trust in. And every time you can write that check or give that money, you're reinforcing that this is not where my trust is. My trust is in God. God is telling me I should be giving, so I am going to follow God and I'm going to do that. And every time you kind of struggle to do it, you're, you know, in a way you're probably struggling to say, I'm not sure I trust enough to have that money disappear from me, right? So it seems like it's just a continual challenge for all of us who live in a material world, who live in a world where we have to eat, we have to have some clothes on our back, we want to do things, okay? But are we doing them in the right way? Are we doing in a way that we're continually distancing ourselves? So as they say on the money, in God we trust, not in money we trust, or in skills or whatever. Things you trust in. So, you know, in summary, all the money is God's, and it's really to be used for his purposes. And to the extent that we're not willing to do that, we're basically saying, well, we're not really trust, we don't really believe him, or we don't really believe it's his for us to do with as he tells us to do. We're going to do it the way we want to do it. And that's what I think Jesus was talking about. I'm also telling you, don't give away, you know, don't give away everything, because you have responsibilities, right? Jesus is not saying give away everything, okay? But he is saying be willing to give in the right cases, and don't be begrudging in the way you're giving when you see that it's an important thing to do. And he clearly in the Old Testament explains where it's important to be giving. So you know, you might be thinking, well, doesn't giving things away only benefit others and not me? And the answer is no, okay? Giving benefits others and it benefits you. And that's, I think, the crux of the entire issue. Is that counterintuitive? Is it counterintuitive that I give something away and somehow I get a benefit? Yeah, it's really counterintuitive. I don't deny that, okay? But there's a lot of counterintuitive things in the world. You know, Matthew 20:16 says, so the last will be first and the first will be last. That's very counterintuitive. Certainly for if you look at it in a worldly perspective. How can the last person end up being first? I've never heard of that, right? It doesn't make any sense. But that's the worldly logic, is it doesn't make any sense. But God's logic, it's different sometimes. And we have to be willing to accept that. And the more we accept that, the more we're willing to kind of say, you know, that doesn't make sense to me, but Jesus is telling me this is how I can grow. So I should do that. I should actually follow him because he is really giving me a logic that transcends the way the world thinks of things. That's the important thing, I think, that that I wanted to convey, that we have our logic that makes sense in a worldly concept, but God has a different logic in some cases, and this is, I think, one of them. And I encourage you to sort of think about that, because I think it's kind of a brain bender, I think. But I think Jesus and God are pretty clear about how giving away things not only benefits other people, but it benefits you. So thank you.